the break on organic news here on Awake Radio. So that was a really full first hour with Patki Wieland of Code Pink, who will be going to Gaza with the group and myself on Tuesday, which I'm starting to get more enthusiastic about. I was a little bit apprehensive, like, what am I doing? I'm like out of my mind. But now I'm kind of starting to really look forward to it. And so now we have Ryan Dawson back with us again. How's it going, Ryan? How's it going over there in Japan?
Well, it's a nice morning over here in Japan. That's exciting that you're going to Gaza.
Yeah, you think so, huh?
I think so. How long are you going for?
I'm flying out on Tuesday, which is the 4th, arriving on the 5th, and staying from the 5th and then coming back on the 13th or something in that vicinity. I'm not sure, like, exactly of the time of the return. I think it's midnight on the 12th, you know, into the 13th.
Yeah, but you'll be there for a good while. That's great. That's good with Code Pink then?
Right.
Hmm. That was wonderful. And
yeah, like I was telling Patki, I first heard about it last year when one of the young girl that went on the trip with Code Pink was a guest on his radio show, News Dissector on Progressive Radio Network. And she was talking all about it. And I thought, wow, part of me was like intrigued. And then another part of me was like, well, that sounds kind of scary. But
I have a couple friends that were on the blockade runners that went down there and got stopped. Ken O'Keefe was one, and Julie Levesque, who works for Global Research. Both of them have been down there before.
So you know Ken O'Keefe. That's how I first learned all about Gaza.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, I know him. But I've been talking about Gaza for about 14 years.
Yeah. Jesus, it's that long. My God.
Yeah, I started my first website with Native American issues, and then I realized here's a modern manifest destiny in Palestine. We have the new settlers and the new Indians, which would be the Palestinians, except it's happening now. But sadly, you know, more than a dozen years, I've been saying, how insane is it for any country to have racial segregation and colonization and ethnic cleansing right out in the open, breaking international law, and nothing is not only done about it, you can't even talk about it. I mean, the mass media acts like Israel's just defending itself from terrorists and doesn't even mention the fact that they're actively colonizing their neighbors and have Jewish-only houses and Jewish-only roads and bombing kids and segregating schools and all of that. All that part of the story is missing, which is just phenomenal. How can that not be on one news network, one paper? Nobody can say anything about it. They know they'd lose their job.
I mean, this is what I'm saying. So is that what people are going to do to have a job? Like, that's what I mean about money, you know, like, and how money equals debt.
Well, this is the thing about the mass media. I mean, it's all the propaganda we heard about the Soviet press in the 80s, that's our press today. It is completely controlled by the Pentagon. If you look at all the three-letter networks, their parent companies go back to the major aerospace contractors with the Pentagon. It's just total corporate welfare. 99% of their wealth comes from government contracts. And a lot of them, as Bill Still pointed out, are leveraged out to the max to banks like JP Morgan. If they don't roll over their loans, they'd be out of business tomorrow. And so they have to obey the government's edicts. And so you saw it during the buildup of the Iraq War. They uniformly lied to everyone about everything. And then after the fact, never corrected themselves, never clearly came out and said, guess what, we are wrong, there weren't any weapons of mass destruction. They just went on to the next propaganda for the next war, for Syria, for Iran, etc., unapologetically. But not one news outfit pointed out the Niger forgeries, for example, or any of the, you know, debunked myths about Iraq. They all lied. And they always lie for Israel, always. And I don't think there's a more stinging concrete example of how controlled the press is than for a state like Israel to exist colonizing their neighbors and not a word is said about it.
And it's being funded by the United States.
Oh, well, sort of. Like, they get $3 billion in aid, but that aid, 75% of it is earmarked to be recycled back into U.S. defense industries. So really, the government's just giving defense industries a big paycheck and using Israel as just sort of a medium to funnel the money through. But that aid, the aid is not a loan. The loans are forgiven every single year. It's free money. They just give them money. So the Israelis get a piece of the pie, their 25%, and the arms industries get their 75%, and the Palestinians get killed.
Nice. Yeah, it's like a well, you know, greased machine at the expense of a lot of people. I mean, it's like, you know, it literally, you know, it's hard to wrap your head around the fact that people can really, you know, just be so profit-driven to the point where you're just going to wipe out, you know, like populations of people.
Yeah, that's, I've said before that the way in the modern corporation, how they're beholden to stockholders, it's sort of this homologous, like nobody's clearly in charge. It's sort of like littering, everybody collectively doing it is what makes the damage. Yeah. But the ideology of growth for the sake of growth is the same as that of a cancer cell. And they'll do anything to push profits up, including exploitation, murder, etc., because it's out of sight, out of mind, and if they didn't do it, someone else would do it, and they just rationalize their position, and the people are suffering for it. And in this case, it's the Palestinians and the Israelis too, because of course there's backlash when you murder people's children. They're going to try and fight back.
I kind of look at you know all this and what's going on as a bit of like climate change. Because, you know, I have this book that I read when I'm on the subway, and it's called What Every Environmentalist Should Know About Capitalism. You know, I mean, like the first paragraph when I started to read the book was, you know, just all about, you know, how the, you know, nature and the environment can just not keep up with all this profit and all these corporations that are, you know, this unlimited growth. And so these people in Gaza and Palestine are basically just that. I mean, they're like part of the environment. It's like an environmental crisis.
Actually is a real environmental crisis, because the Israelis have been using depleted uranium since 1973, yeah. And they've used it not only in Palestine, but also in Lebanon and Egypt. And that poisons the ground for a very long time.
You know, and right. And so the people are just like, whatever, trees or something that are just being like mowed down.
Well, actually, they're mowing down the olive trees as well.
And yes,
they take ages to grow, and they're polluting the Palestinian farms, and they burn them down, and they bulldoze everything, including the houses. So yeah, just like the trees, they'll smash a house just as if it was a tree, and then they build a new settlement for the chosen race of God, self-proclaimed. I mean, the Zionist ideology, the perversion of Judaism they have, is where God is both a racist and a real estate agent. I can't think of anything more arrogant than forcefully taking someone's land and saying, well, it's okay, God gave it to me. I mean, it's just completely nuts.
See, that's, okay, I have to plug yoga just for a minute, because the reason why I love this practice is because, you know, like what you just described and how, you know, people perpetuate like their version of God.
Right.
You know, instead of, you know, getting to the level, you know, you have to dig through the layers of shit inside your mind and clear that crap out and really, you know, really connect to, you know, what God is underneath all of the crap perceptions that people think, you know, like that's what kills me. It's like people take their misalignment, you know, and apply it to, you know, to life and you know, infringing it on, you know, on especially calling it God. I mean, calling something so misaligned as that kind of behavior God.
Well, some people reduce God down to helping their sports team win on a particular day. I mean, it's most of the time, unfortunately, God is just an authoritative cloak to push somebody's personal ideology as, you know, just an extra oomph to say, well, I have the undebunkable authority because there's nothing higher than God, and God wants me to do whatever I just want to do myself. It's just a way to rationalize their own behavior.
So, right. I mean, so to get to the, to truly like what God is, what kind of comes to my mind off the top of my head is that movie, Million Dollar Baby, where, Morgan Freeman is kind of narrating this part, and he's talking about the training and how you have to strip yourself down to the bare wood.
Well, that's a practice in Zen Buddhism, as well as, shedding a lot of conceptions and things that are pushed on you in society. But I wanted to say something about the book you were talking about, climate change and environmentalism. That's something that people also have to be very careful about, because just like there's a group of people who will rationalize anything for the sake of defense or safety or security, that their brain just turns off and they go, well, it's for defense, let's just spend as much money as possible, we got to be safe. People will do that with the environment too, because we all want a healthy environment. I mean, who would saw the branch they're sitting on? However, environmentalists aren't always helping the environment, but they're rather just predatory lawyers with a theme. And they know that they can work with an air of impunity and get away with whatever they want, as long as they, title things with anything to do with the environment, like saying the Patriot Act, which had nothing to do with patriotism, or No Child Left Behind. You have the word, child is in the title. Who wants to go against that? But if you actually look at what they're doing, the proposed solutions for reducing greenhouse gas emissions don't actually do that. All they do is transfer credits from smaller agribusinesses into large agribusinesses, which give them a monopoly over distribution and production, which just is about price controls and people profiting. It has really nothing to do with the environment whatsoever.
Well, that's pretty much why I stick to, health. And I really, because I see it myself all the time, like so many people, they call themselves awake or, liberty people or something like that. But like more often than not, because people are not really, they're not digging inside of themselves, like on, in fitness terms, because, I'm always like this big advocate for fitness, just physically, mentally, and spiritually, getting underneath, looking inside of themselves, like how their own programming, how we were all programmed to keep this system going. Like you have to get underneath that stuff. To me, the best way to change the world is to work on yourself, get and dig underneath the program that's inside of yourself.
Well, that's something Gandhi said as well. He said, be the change you want to see in the world. And a lot of the major religions say, take care of your temple being your body, because and martial arts the philosophy, the same thing. You've got to take care of your body because it's all related to your mental health and your immune system and everything.
Exactly. Like, which brings me to my next favorite subject, which is the mind-body connection, because what I see and feel in society so much is how to such an extent that the mind is completely disconnected from the body. And it's like this, we live in a mind dominated world, and it's all about using the head to overpower the body and nature. And people just literally like way overvalue the intellect over reality and the body and being in the present moment so much. Like I've experienced it so much in my life.
It's like one of those false paradigms where they divide the mind and body and they act like the body's this nasty thing and the intellect is superior and good and the body is just so lowly or whatever, rather than just seeing actually it's all your body. I mean, your brain too.
Right.
And it's all connected. And simple physiology, I mean, the act of smiling actually will change how you feel. And you can start with the physical to change your mental, actually. And exercise and increasing endorphins and all that, you can't just brush that off. And even on the mental side, one of my pet peeves is when I hear this baloney about, are you creative or intellectual? Which is another false paradigm, like this left brain, right brain nonsense. People are usually both. They're usually intelligent, intellectual, and creative, or neither. You're either dumb or smart. But the idea that, like, oh, you're good in math, so you suck in English or something like that, it's just part of this need for equality and fear of superiority where everyone has to be even. So anybody that has a particular talent, it has to come with the stigma of being negative. If somebody is an intellectual, say, scientific-minded kid in school, they don't want to be stuck with the stigma of not being emotional and being cold-hearted and socially inept or something. And likewise, if somebody's very artistic, they don't want to be branded as being, oh, because I'm artistic, I'm also an airhead and unanalytical and just an emotional, like, loser. No matter what your talent is, it always gets tagged with some negative thing, and it makes people steer away from those fields because they don't want to be associated with the negative side of what comes with their talent in art or science or whatever it is. So I really hate that paradigm of creativity versus intellect, because the thing is, they are one and the same. You have to have imagination and sympathy and empathy to be moral, and you have to have an intellect as well. It takes those acts of imagination. Our most supreme and best science and scientists ever have been the imaginative ones. I mean, that's how it always comes about. But they have this silly notion of dividing, like, topics for academics, as if being good at one thing means you have to be terrible at another. And that's utter nonsense.
Right. And I mean, I think of the body, because I doing fitness and everything, and they talk about, like, proportion and posture, you know, but there's also, like, an emotional posture with, you know, like, all of your different emotional parts being in the same kind of balance and healthy posture as your body is in, you know, so I just think of it that way. And you mentioned martial arts, and I've, for the longest time, I've wanted to do martial art. I feel I'm at a point now where I feel like I have to do it. Like, I feel like I have to learn self-defense, because I see how, like, I've been so programmed by society, you know, to basically screw myself and live beyond my means and be, like, nice all the time when I really can't afford it. And, like, you know, you're bad if you're not always kind of people pleasing and being what everybody wants you to be all the time. And, you have to say no, like, you have to have your limits and your boundaries, you know, without guilt. And, you know, without, like, fear of, like, conflict, you know, like, what I notice, again, about, like, people is that they really don't like when there's limits. Like, if you set limits, you're some kind of, you know, bad person if you're not, you know, being giving, if you don't have an endless smile on your face all the time. I mean, sometimes, like, I think it's good to just, like, embrace your
reminds me of the preacher in the Canterbury Tales who's going around telling everybody to be charitable and give money. Meanwhile, what is he doing? He's collecting money from everybody and being the greediest person there.
Right.
I highly recommend martial arts. It's been great in my life. It allows me to do and say what I want, where and when I want, whenever I want. But the idea of self-defense, or the scenario of being in a fight or whatever, is a very improbable, pretty small thing for that to happen. But that's not the purpose of it. It's just the process of practicing the martial arts, so that yes, that could happen. You may get in a fight, but that's really, it doesn't matter. As in any other sport, you know, the putting the ball across the line or in the hoop or whatever is not something you're going to go carry over in your real life. It's just all the activity involved in doing that, improving your speed, your strength, your coordination, etc., in whatever the sport is. That's the healthy aspect of it. And the goal, the end result, doesn't really matter whether you're, you know, hitting a target or throwing a ball or punch or whatever. That doesn't matter. It's just the process that matters, not the aim and the end.
Exactly. And more for the mental discipline, I would go, you know, do it more for the mental discipline. And, you know, and of course, like...
Yeah, I would compare the mental aspect of martial arts on par with, you know, mastering a musical instrument or something. It takes daily dedication and a lot of willpower.
And the reason why I love, you know, anything fitness related is because, you know, you're just utilizing, you know, just so much more than what people utilize. I mean, we have so much, you know, physically and just energetically that is not being utilized in our own best interest. And what we don't, you know, the thing I like so much about yoga practice is that it teaches you to, you know, integrate, you know, they use the word integrate a lot in yoga, and it's all about integrating all of the parts of yourself that we were taught, you know, to cut ourselves off from. And so all that energy, you know, like, you know, cause you know, so many things, you know, we learn to be ashamed of in our lives, like normal, healthy feelings, you know, where we learn to be kind of ashamed of, like, sexuality or fear or,
pride.
You know, yeah. You know, and so, like, those emotions and that energy gets kind of cut off, and our bodies are, like, you know, holding it locked away inside of us somewhere. And yoga is all about, you know, breathing, like moving into all that tightness and all that bearing down and holding on, and, you know, breathing into it and freeing up and letting out all of that energy that's really working against us, and teaches us how to make it work for us.
Well, if I can nerd out for just a second, I think that humans evolve with a particular level of physical, social, and intellectual activity. But in modern times, and creative activity as well, of course, but in modern times, we're really lopsided and we push everything on academics. And you look at children, they're stuck in school 6 or 7 hours a day, sitting in desk. And a lot of the physical and social activity that we evolved with, that is gone. And so you need some kind of surrogate, whether it's yoga, martial arts, sports, or something, to exercise that potential. If you're not actualizing your potential, you're going to be unhealthy and unhappy. And we push everything in forcing kids to learn all this mathematics and all these good intellectual things. These aren't bad things, but there has to be a lot more balance. And I think the school system, it treats PE as just a sort of side elective thing. So is health class. It's sort of, it's in the on the bottom of the pyramid of, right, you know, the hierarchy, like, of academic subjects. Yeah. But I mean, in school, I mean, they won't teach you economics until college or philosophy. But there's a lot of things they don't want you to learn about. But they'll push in, you know, fictional fairy tale time, which is their English class, which is usually just literature. I mean, those things are important, but they shouldn't have the weight that they have compared to some of the subjects that are treated as secondary, the arts and music and physical health and things like that are just sort of like meh. And yet, they're vitally important and usually a lot more useful in the real world, which is funny how people talk about school and real life, because they all understand that school is not real life. That's how removed it is from anything practical that you're going to use in your life.
And, you know, speaking of math, I mean, I think a martial art, you know, and yoga practice is all about math. I mean, it's all about, you know, physics and weight and leverage and, to me, like, it's, I feel like I've learned more about math and the economy through, you know, fitness and weight training and yoga than I ever would have if I was, you know, maybe working on Wall Street or something.
Well, I mean, certainly there's a lot more physics in sports and in baseball and whatever than there gonna be in just concrete type that you can see, witness, than what you get in the classroom usually. But I mean, you can put math into anything. I mean, everything's measurable and everything requires all of that. But what I don't like is how in math class is divorced from economics. I mean, if a kid asks, what is this for? In your real life, the majority of the math you're actually going to use will be for economic purposes, whether it's just simply balancing your checkbook, opening a bank account, or whatever. But that's where you could use all this math, but they put the focus on calculus instead. And I really wish that the high aim instead of calculus would be more towards statistics and, you know, things that can be applicable to economic life, because I just find that far more useful. And I think people could be a lot more motivated to learn it when they can see what it's for. than the really rare instances of calculus and things for very specific jobs. It's not that, that we don't need to know that either, but I think the aim should be more towards stats, and I think calculus should be considered the specialist type of thing. But they've got it all upside down. And I could say that for every subject. I mean, history, history class in school is basically the history of war. They don't do the history of invention, the history of science, history of religion, history of philosophy. There are lots of different types of history to follow besides, you know, the governments killing each other by sending their peons in as cannon fodder to go steal land.
Right, and they definitely don't teach you about the, you know, American history with, you know, the Indians. I mean, they made them seem like savages or something.
Well, Columbus has his own holiday, and he killed 11 million people just in the Caribbean alone without even reaching the mainland of the Americas. 11 million. That's about two Holocausts from World War II, and that was within 2-year period. And they fed people to dogs and chopped off their hands and ran them through with swords and burned them alive and raped women to death with gangs and all manner of horror. They actually sold little girls to gangs to be raped to death. And the man has a holiday. He has his own holiday. And he's credited with discovering the New World, which isn't true considering it was inhabited, and many, many other explorers had already been there and back, and it was well known for 400 some years before Columbus.
It's pretty brutal, boy. I mean, there's such brutality in the world. But
we have torture today in Gitmo.
Hi guys, I hate to interrupt you, but you're popping and crackling and you've got some really good information. Should we go to a song? You want me to do a recall while we wait?
Sure. I mean, he sounds good to me. I don't hear anything.
I'm getting some distortion, and so are the listeners.
Oh.
Oh, that's
I'll
true.
Hang up, give you a quick song and a recall.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
Wow, I don't know. You're coming in good.
I think,
Who, me?
Yeah.
I'm popping?
Yeah. It just sounds like someone needs to tune us in better on a station dial or something.
Oh, I mean, so how do I sound to you? How do I sound to you?
To me?
Yeah.
Yeah, popping and clicking.
Really?
Well, I'm recording it too, so maybe I can filter that out and send it to you. I don't know.
If you could do that, that would be great.
All right.
That would be awesome, because I haven't learned how to do that.
How are you?
Okay.
Are you recording it through Skype, Brian?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know how to do that yet.
I'll tell you afterward.
Okay.
We could go live when you're ready.
Yep, sure. Ready?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Okay, so we're back. We were experiencing what I was told was a bit of interference or just not coming in clear, which, you know, I mean, I can't notice. I mean, to me, Ryan is coming in perfectly clear. He wasn't saying anything that he couldn't hear me, but apparently listeners were not able to hear us. So maybe we should, we'll just kind of rewind a little bit and go back to...
Well, maybe we can ask the NSA for a copy.
Yeah, maybe that's why we're coming in crackly, right?
I was talking about the educational system before, and I was just using mathematics as an example on how currently calculus is sort of the aim in mathematics for let's say, high school or so. And I think it ought to be aimed more towards statistics and math that can be used in economics, because I think it's a lot more useful, and I think students are more motivated to use math that they can see is applicable to their life and know what it's for than the more sort of specialist type of math that you see in calculus and that kind of thing. And that's for every subject. Every subject seems to be upside down. They sort of drown students in academic minutiae and prevent them from learning the real quality and usually easier things that would have more impact on their life and be far more useful than what they're getting in school. Because they get out of school and they have to relearn all those skills they weren't taught anyway, and basically learn their job the first 2 weeks they're on their job just by, you know, watching the people who have been there ahead of them apprentice style. So, yeah, we waste a lot of time on an overload of academics.
What I just thought about was that, you know, when we're growing up, you know, we learn how to like ride a bike or roller skate or, you know, things like that, which takes, you know, mind body interaction to learn all these things. But then when you get older, you know, you're taught to just kind of blindly follow orders and not to listen to what your gut says, which again, like that's something that I never did in my life. Like, you know, that doesn't make any sense because the whole point of life is to, you know, be your own person. I mean, to be an individual, to listen to your instincts, to listen to your gut. I mean, that's, you know, what everybody should be being encouraged to do. And to be, you know, a lot of these, you know, the police department, the military, you know, like this just, you know, I mean, most people just say in their jobs or like, you know, the Holocaust, like, oh, I'm just like following orders. I mean, well,
our police department's completely out of control in the United States. But there was a story recently and it was sad, but I mean, it was just not comparable to some other things the cops have been doing. But I found this interesting. I think it was last week. There was some blonde girl jogging and she got arrested for jaywalking.
Yeah.
And it was everywhere in the news, but the cops kill people every day, kill people and get away with it. And they never put that in the news. But they had this white girl with blonde hair crying in handcuffs. And it was in Huffington Post and AOL and on TV. And I'm like, okay, it was definitely wrong what the cops did to her. But it must be nice to have a voice because a lot of people do not. And they're getting their dogs shot. They're getting their houses raided. Sometimes their children get killed.
Brian, sorry, Paula, she's telling me that it's worse. the transmission sounds worse, she's saying. So I'm wondering if we maybe we can hang up and maybe like I can add you to the call instead of her adding you to the call.
All right. I'll try whatever you like want to do.
You know, I mean, I just asked her how it sounds, and she said it sounds worse. Paula, can
you want to try that?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
okay.
Yeah.
Let me know when you're ready to go live. I'll count you in.
Yeah, we're ready.
5, 4, 3, 2.
Okay, we're trying it again. Sorry about that, folks, but I just keep getting messages from Paula that the quality of the sound is not coming over clearly, even though everything from where I'm sitting and from where Ryan is sitting sounds perfectly clear. So we're going to go for 3 more minutes, and then I'm going to play an interview that I did with Deborah Sweet yesterday. So go ahead, Ryan, finish what you were talking about.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's unfortunate to have audio problems, but when you go to Gaza, make sure you take lots of pictures and keep me updated on that so that I can get that information out, because really the only way we ever get any information out of Gaza is from independent journalists on the ground, because the mass media is a complete joke.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we need to start valuing each other more, you know. I mean, people are so in the habit of kind of like treating those around them. I mean, I don't know if you experience it, but I do. I people, it's like the more they know somebody, the more, you know, they feel comfortable with somebody. They feel more comfortable treating that person like shit. And I think that that's something people really need to be aware of. You know, it's such an unconscious kind of thing. And it takes too much effort, I feel like, for people to be paying attention and to be, you know, because you have to make an effort, you know, like, you know, I don't see people putting a whole lot of effort into really changing. Like me, my whole life, I was doing self-help stuff and self-improvement stuff. My whole life was about, you know, being mindful of the way that I speak, the words that I choose, you know, conscious communication. Like, I don't see anybody doing any of that stuff.
Well, I think a lot of people aren't even aware that there's anything wrong. When it comes to something like Palestine, most Americans have never heard of Palestine and could care less. They have enough problems themselves, you know, finding jobs and getting work, and they don't, you know, look at Detroit. I mean, we worry about Palestine, but in our own backyard, we have a city that's completely bankrupt, and all those people who it looks the same as Palestine, really, with the dilapidated houses and everything else. There's poverty everywhere, and we have to have empathy and sympathy for everybody, and distance shouldn't negate any particular people, but it is preventable. But what happened to Detroit, as bad as it is an economic problem. What happened to Palestine is because of Israeli aggression, which is completely immoral and very preventable. But we don't really, they're voiceless people, and it's a very difficult political solution because you can't really change the politics until people change themselves first and have a social revolution. Until you have that social change, you can't really have a political change. It's not going to happen. That's historically how things are.
Yep. But I want to thank you, and I want to apologize for the technical difficulties. I don't recall having it the last time you were on, but so we'll just take a really short break, and then Paula will play the interview that I did with Deborah Sweet, which is only a 20-minute interview. So thank you, Ryan, and I'll talk to you when I get back from Gaza.
Okay, I'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.